Welcome to Mindful Men Talk. I'm James.
I'm Steve. We're two men talking to get men talking.
What a tagline, Steve. We're two men talking to get men talking. Your brainwave, you came up with that one. Well, I'll give you the credit for that.
But thanks for that. And well, I do occasionally have a good idea or two, you know. Does that mean that I'm here for keeps then? Can I stay?
Not sure about, you know, I don't want to commit to anything, but let's a bit of probation. We'll give it a month and we'll talk again, Steve.
All right. Well, let's just watch this space then.
So, two men talking to get men talking. I really feel like that does summarize what we're all about and just brings it back to the focal point of kind of what this podcast is all about, essentially. And with the refocus of the new series, it just fits really nicely.
Yes, I think so. I think, but it's also kind of multifaceted, which you're probably going to unpack, I guess, later in this episode in terms of, you know, what does actually talking mean? You know, in many ways, you know, what does that actually mean? Mm. Talking to who? Talking what about? But yeah, I think it gives us a real focus on the fact that generally men are reluctant to talk because, yeah, they just don't know who to talk to. They don't know what to talk about. So yeah, it's good to really shine the spotlight squarely on that whole topic.
Well, we'll get into that. But before, what's new for you, Steve? What have you been up to? Anything exciting this week?
Oh, what, life, James? You're asking me about real life.
Yeah. We haven't got that long. Just we boil it down.
Well, I suppose the most immediate thing is we got in today is that we've got a broody chicken at the moment.
Oh, wow.
So that's a new experience.
That is new.
Yeah, so we've now got three silky hens.
As you do. Two dogs,
three. Well, the silky hens thing came out of the lockdown thing. Yeah, so let's not even get into that. So yeah, so that's a new experience. But yeah, who knew? One of them's broody, and we apparently have to break the broodiness.
Oh, well, so good luck with that.
So she's in the house at the moment, briefly.
Oh, confinement.
So wish me luck. I'll give you updates on how that's going.
Yes, you can give us some updates in the next episode. We're on episode two already, actually, and time flies. I mean, I don't really in the last week since
what's
we
been
recorded.
Going on for you?
Yeah, life, Steve, really. Actually, it's been a pretty settled week. Got a few runs in, feeling good, enjoying being back on the podcast.
Yeah, you're glad to be back, aren't you?
I'm glad, actually. Yeah. I was really looking forward. I was actually a bit excited, a little bit. I'm not a little
don't
bit
don't overplay it.
About recording today. I was looking forward to it.
Why is that?
Well, a bit like we said in the last episode, really, about, you know, what the motivations were to get back to it. About having a chat with each other, being able to see each other in this format again, and just the idea, I guess, that other people will hopefully be listening and benefiting in some way. This is an exciting thing, and it's different in the week. It's a very different thing, isn't it? Recording a podcast. It's quite nice.
And actually, I was excited to come today because we are in this wonderful space that you've created, and we'll presumably be sharing a little bit of.
Yes.
You know, some pictures.
Media.
I think we should.
Oh, yeah. I've signed us up to Instagram.
Oh, that is news. Well, there you go. Oh, you love a bit of Instagram.
Yeah.
James is an absolute hoot on Instagram.
Not all the selfies.
No, you are good. He is good at Instagram, I have to say. I haven't got a clue. Yeah, James, that's why he's laughing at me, because that's where the age difference does
and
come
And I forgot
in.
To tell you that.
Yeah, so I know. Well, thanks for that. But anyway,
you know.
Watch this space, because I know, in all seriousness, you have created an absolutely wonderful space. You and Mrs. D.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's lovely.
It's nice to be using it in different ways, actually.
It's got such a great feel about it, and it's perfect for today, and perfect for the podcast, I should say.
Yeah, we've got no dogs, no chickens. No.
It's tranquil.
Peaceful.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so in episode one, we spoke about, I would say it's a bit more of a general intro episode or reintroduction to the podcast. It was called Two Men Talking, and a bit of a play as well on your reference to our new tagline. And I think we covered a few different bases, but it was a nice general chat, is what I would call it. Today, we're going to focus on the question, what does good mental health mean? And in the last episode, we touched on this because I asked you that question in there, and we didn't sort of stay with that for too long. You gave an answer, we moved on, we were just talking about some other bits and pieces, but today we're going to come back to that. So yes, what does good mental health mean? That is today's subject, Steve. And I know you're ready for it.
Well, only when I was thinking, I knew this was coming, okay. This wasn't completely a surprise. But what came up for me when I was thinking about this over the last week or so is to really step back. And before we even think about what does good mental health look like, particularly for men, what does, if you like, mental ill health look like? Or more specifically, why do we struggle mentally and emotionally? And why do men struggle in particular? Because I think for me, before we can actually ask what good mental health, we have to sort of ask ourselves, well, what is it we're trying to get better at? And I think it's really important, without going off on my soapbox, which I will, I think this is a really important point, because we know, James, you know this being a PT, but you know, with your physical health, there's visible signs that maybe your physical health is suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more apparent, isn't it?
It's more obvious, but we often don't know we don't know that we are struggling mentally, and actually that we ought to be giving some, or it would be really helpful to give some attention to our mental health and mental well-being. And it's being thrown around very freely at the moment. So I would like to almost just to kind of get into, particularly around men's mental health, a discussion about, well, why do we struggle mentally? And do we even know that we're struggling mentally? Do men know?
Well, it's actually, I'm just going to come back to that point about physical health, because I made a note of that. I was thinking about that in context to obviously what I do for a living and the parallels and just general similarities between the two. So I actually asked myself that question, what is good physical health? And I went from that basis of the things you can do for your physical health, you know, in terms of exercising regularly, eating nutritious food, recovery, rest, consistency of what you do. And actually, there are many similarities in anything that when it comes to what you're trying to improve in life, whether it's or focus on it in terms of your health and well-being, whether it's the mind, the body, or both, because they're not separate. We've said it before, they go hand in hand. So actually, it's not just about physical health. What I'm talking about now is actually also about mental health and vice versa. But yeah, I think that's it would certainly help me, a good way to think of it. And we don't often talk of it in the same way that we do about physical health. I don't think there is as much focus on, well, there isn't. I mean, we know that's why we're doing this podcast, or one of the reasons there's not as much focus on mental health, especially for men. Whereas we are used to a little bit more what we can do for our body.
Yeah, I think that is right. Why do we have a problem? And what are the signs that we've got a problem? And then what are the ideas about what does good, how can we improve it? How can we take care of it in some of the ways you're describing our physical health? So I would just like to spend a bit of time, because I think it's so important. I feel really motivated and passionate about sort of just spelling some of this stuff out, particularly for men. And actually, it's drawing on some strands that we've talked about in our first series of podcasts. But I think it's really important to put it back on the table to refocus about why we do have issues around mental health, which we know for some men can end up, unfortunately, fatal. What I'm talking about the kind of messages that that men and boys in particular have, and I touched on that last time, but I think really just to dig into that, and I am going to mention him. I'm going to mention Dr. Gabor Mate again, who we've mentioned before, because Gabor says something that is absolutely key to mental health generally for men and women, which is that we all have an imprint from a very early age. And that, I think, for men is so, so, so important. The imprint that we're left with about what it is to be a boy, an acceptable boy, an acceptable man. We start developing beliefs at a very young age, and that then stays with us into adulthood. These kind of very clear messages that we then, you know, we believe as the truth. And some of those messages can be really unhelpful. And I know from my own experience, you know, you start to say to yourself, it's okay to be this as a boy, as a man, but it's not okay to be this or that.
I love a bit of Gabor. And we've got to get him on the show one day, Steve. Come on, he'll come on.
Well, I do not like any sense of somebody who purports to be an expert, somebody who purports to be a guru, but I don't get that feeling with Gabor Mate. I just think he's just sharing his what he's learned in life, which is really what we're doing here. You know, and actually I think it just resonates with me what he says from my own experience and what I've really seen in other people in my work as a mindfulness coach and my clinical work. So yeah, I would love, he's got a very, very quiet wisdom. And I am going to mention it, but he just recently, we watched a film that he'd created, that he's made called The Wisdom of Trauma, which I think is one of the most important films that I think most of anyone should watch and would get something from.
Maybe I can put the link up.
I think that would be helpful. But yeah, I do think that whole idea of an imprint, because seeds are sown at a very early age around what we allow in ourselves and disallow. And it's the disallowing of parts of ourselves that then can cause, I want to use the word disease, because when we talk about disease, mental yes. disease is a really good word, you know, that we don't realize, but we do, you know, we get that sense that, you know, I was just thinking, what kind of messages for you, James, you know, as you're growing up, in terms of what things, you know, you thought, oh, actually, yeah, I'm on safe ground here as a boy, as a man, because I'm doing X. But actually that part of myself will know. Because we talked a bit about this last week with the footy and going to the pub, but I think it's all those messages. I'm just curious, because obviously for me, it's not a bit more obvious, but obviously it's easier to call on some of those experiences because of my sexuality. Mm. But I'm just curious as, you know, for you, because there's a danger for me as well as getting to think, oh yeah, well, James, you know, as a straight man, you had it easy, you know, because, you know, but that isn't the case.
What do you mean? In what sense?
Well, you know, like you obviously like football.
Yeah.
But you don't drink. I mean, we've talked about these things before.
I did drink, actually, as a teenager growing up. I did. But actually, a lot of the things that I used to do, I guess, have changed over time as I've become more aware and a bit of self-exploration and changing bits and pieces as I've grown and finding my own values and aligning to them. So a lot has changed. So I did a lot of those things. I kind of did a lot of the stuff that I would say the average, whatever that means, but the average boy, bloke would do, kind of just followed that pattern. So it wasn't until I got older, probably in my sort of mid-20s, that I really started to make changes. So I think I spoke about that before once or briefly, about there sort of almost being a line in the mid, from the age of 25 and older or above, where I really live very differently to how I did when I was younger, not just because of age and whatnot, but just my values and what's important. So I think that it's easy when you're young to just get swept along, yeah, with what's expected of you and what you, your mates are doing and the usual, really, which, yeah, is sort of football, I don't know, going out with mates, yeah, drinking when you get to that sort of teenage years. So I did all of that, but I don't think I was encouraged to do anything different.
No.
There was no encouragement, and there was no sort of reason, if that makes sense. There was no guidance to do anything different to what I was doing or what everyone else was doing.
I suppose also, as part of my question, is also that we know that for, I mean, I'm talking about sort of the way that we behave. It's behavior, but also it's about, for me, why men struggle is around particularly what's allowed in terms of emotions. And again, we touched on it before, but I think it's so important, because as a boy, you know, you're told it's not okay to fill in the blanks, sad, particularly, you know, big boys don't cry and all of that sort of stuff, or feeling fear, feeling anger, all these things you can start to internalize as a boy. In particular, it's not okay to behave in this way. It's not okay to feel this. And this can happen to any human being, but particularly we're talking about men. And I think that is something that creates the recipe and plants the seeds for mental struggles later. Because when you do feel those things, or you do want to behave in that way, and when I'm talking about behavior, maybe that I'm talking about where it's disallowed, you know, for example, something I've written down here, girly interests. So maybe you want to, I don't know, go dancing, or you want to...
I've never been a dancer.
No, you go. No, but, you know, if you want to drink green tea.
Yeah. Well,
that could be treated. That, you know what absolutely. I'm saying? I'm being tricky. There's something that you do, but actually, somebody, oh, sometimes. Come on, James, have a real cup of tea, have a real drink. I mean, you know, we've had those, we've mentioned that in previous podcasts. It's just an example. But from an early age, you know, if men, you know, if you, as a young boy, you want to dress up, oh, you can't do that. You know, it's like that means that you can't be a real boy. And, you know,
well, going back to the emotions. The emotion side of things that you mentioned, I think sometimes as well, from my experience at least, is that it's not always that you're told you can't do this, you can't do that or express your emotions, but you're not encouraged to show your emotions, if that makes sense. So,
well, which it
is,
does.
Which is pretty much the same thing. Like, really, it's just, you know, another way of it coming about. But I think that's just as important, because if someone's not encouraging you to show your emotions or to express your feelings or emotions, then ultimately, yeah, there's no real sort of ground to be able to feel like you can do that.
No, and I think that's what you highlighted, a really important point there, which just to expand on. It's not that you're not told, you're not necessarily told specifically, but there's a felt sense that it's wrong. And that can be a sense of a disapproving look when you're a young child, or you could be laughed at, or something that can leave its mark, which is, again, comes back to the imprint. So you've told me, oh gosh, I should never show that I feel sad, because if I do, I'm going to be laughed at, or I'm going to be shamed for it. And shame is a big one in all of this for men. So you bear it, it can be communicated, not just verbally. It can be communicated non-verbally, but it can be really imprinted at a very deep level. And some really big seeds are planted that, when we then grow and all the rest of it, and we have all the responsibility of adulthood, and then other things come into play about what a man should be as he grows, you know, as he grows into an adult, you know, and there's all this, oh, well, you know, only am I supposed to keep this, I've got to keep everything else going. I'm the head of the household. I've got to provide for the family. And there's all these pressures then around, you know, money and providing and all this sort of stuff. All I'm saying is that there's so many ways that seeds of mental distress, mental disease, emotional distress are there. And what happens when we're triggered, when those sensitivities are triggered, what do we do? And this is what we just talked about. What are the signs that we are struggling mentally? There's many, you know.
Yeah.
That is something that I'm really clear about. But we don't realize that they potentially are signs of distress. And I talked about them briefly in the last episode, drinking too much.
Can you recognize that in your own behavior, in your own experience of when, are you able to perhaps be a bit more aware of when you are tipping the balance, you can feel that the drive behind the reason why you're doing it is perhaps because of how you're feeling?
Now I can. Absolutely spot on question. Absolutely. Because that is the trick. Because most of the time we don't realize that it's potentially a symptom. And we're in a society, and we've talked about this briefly before, where it's not, for me personally, a good one nowadays is using the phone. You know, you can, when I'm feeling distressed, rather than sitting, you know, really understanding or really asking what's actually really going on, you want to just, it's a distraction. All of these things I'm talking about, we want to distract ourselves away because we don't want to deal with something that we feel we shouldn't feel, or we shouldn't be seen to do, or we're ashamed of. So we want to distract. So the phone is a constant distraction, or anything where we're overdoing it, or we're even meditating. People are shocked if I say that. You think, surely that can't be right. How can meditating be a good, how can it not be good? Well, if we use it as a way of distracting from reality or what needs attending to, we can actually become addicted to meditating. We can become
definitely
addicted to
anything.
Yeah. And I think that is, and we don't think of it, but it then can show up through ultimately mental distress or anxiety, depression. And where I get very frustrated, we're in a society that encourages trying to get rid of a symptom and not really encourage us to, be curious about what the hell's actually going on. And I think that's what Gabor talks about a little bit in that film. I think, you know, there's a huge step change is needed. So we've got to think about small steps, and we can maybe come on and talk about, well, what can we do?
Well, yeah, that's a good segue into this, because really what you've just spoken about sort of sets the scene. So based on what you're talking about and your experiences, do you feel that, I mean, are we talking about a level of awareness around all of this first, like we have spoken about in the past? So being aware of how you've been brought up, some of the things that have been installed in you, and having that awareness on a base level before perhaps you can even look at the question of, you know, what is good mental health? You need to have some sort of awareness. You need to have some sort of understanding. Do you think that's an integral part of the requirement almost to then be able to look after your mental health?
Absolutely. And actually, the awareness is absolutely the key. And I want to share something. Can I share something?
You can share something.
Because that's perfect. I want to just sum up for me. So there's something I share when I teach mindfulness. I just thought today it'd be really relevant. And you've just led me into this beautifully.
You're welcome. I didn't know.
I know you didn't. I know. Because we don't rehearse this, you know. Sorry, am I okay?
Let me just. You're drifting over.
I know. So I dropped, sorry, because I was just reaching.
Can we fill in for you while you?
No, I know. I'm just trying to find the document. Okay.
Oh, you've got it.
Yeah, I've got it. I've got it. Okay. So this is something that we share in when I'm teaching my phone. It'll become clear. Let me read it, and then we can. I will explain, and hopefully, it'll become apparent. It's called Autobiography in Five Chapters, by I think her name's Portia Nelson. So one, I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Two, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Three, I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Four, I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Five, I walk down another street.
So what you're talking about there is, and I really enjoyed that, it's about awareness.
You led me into it. Absolutely. How did, well, I'm just curious, James, because I don't know, have you heard that before?
No, never. Never. But it's a great point in terms of, you know, the way it's broken down, and it really does highlight the situations that, certain situations that you might find yourself in and how they can play out, essentially.
Yeah. Is that how it sounded to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. When I taught this, once I was read that at a mindfulness course, and somebody said to me, oh, Steve, so is it all actually about walking down another street? Which is a fair question, and I understood.
Yeah.
But the point about it is, ultimately, as we cultivate more awareness, and I want to bring this back in terms of what can we do on a sort of a practical level, particularly for men, because it's like, hold on a minute, what's all this about? This is getting into a bit sort of, you know, getting a bit, maybe a little bit ethereal, but it's not really, because actually what that's really saying is, ultimately, through awareness, we have choices. And I think this is so important for men. And I want to keep saying this because I said it earlier that when we're young, we have a set of beliefs. But when you don't know that that is just something that is a belief, you believe it to be an absolute truth, your truth, you keep hearing that expression, that can be so damaging. And unless you can find a way in to break that, and that's what really upsets me when I hear about male suicide, I think, no, that person was not able to break out in any shape or form to challenge what is going round and round and round in their head. And it breaks my heart because I just think there isn't a, but you haven't had, no, you haven't been able to access even a chink of light to have a different voice that actually what you've been carrying around is not real. You've believed it, hook, line, and sinker. And the reason I share that autobiography in five chapters is I think it sets out beautifully. You're going to keep falling in the same hole for the rest of your life, potentially. You may get wise in, start to note, oh, it's there, I'll walk around it, or actually I know it's down that street. But it doesn't mean you're not going to still fall in the same hole. No. But you're going to get, through awareness, you're going to get, have a possibility of a different outcome.
Well, you spoke there about choices, and that's quite, that's very empowering actually, because I think it is important. And yes, we could rattle off loads of things that you could do for your mental health, but actually there has to be a level and a layer before that and after, because without the awareness, without the stuff we're talking about now, those things, not to say they don't matter, they can make a difference, but ultimately you need to know where it's all coming from and what, I guess, direction you're going in at the same time. And as I said, that's empowering. That's what I think when I hear that, because it brings you back to the realization that you do have a choice. And you may not feel like it in the moment. As you said, it's easy to say that now, where we're in this state of mind, when you're feeling in a dark place or you're really struggling with your emotions and feelings, or something's happened and you're triggered, you probably don't feel in that moment always like you have a choice, but you do. And that brings it all back for me when you say that.
Brings us back to that point about, just the possibility
that
there may be a choice, that it's not exactly as your head is telling you. That is it in a nutshell, you know. And it's hard, you know, because these patterns that we inherit, that's why I wanted to step back at the beginning, James, because I actually just think these patterns are really ingrained, okay? Mm. And they'll keep playing out. Well, my patterns will keep playing out until my triggers are there, right? And they're going to be there until I pass away. But through awareness, I have a possibility of not keep falling in the same hole. I may do, but I think, oh, there I am again. Or I may have more choices, which mean that I have better mental health because there's more flexibility. And for me, so answer the question, what is good mental health? In its essence, it is awareness and developing the awareness to step back and notice its patterns of behavior. You know, it's so shameful that, you know, X, Y, and Z, but that's you're telling yourself that, and start to realize that it is just you telling yourself is a starting point. And maybe just sharing that with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we come back to the, what does it mean to be talking? Well, and it can be all kinds of things, you know, but sometimes even just airing to somebody that you're struggling with your thoughts even, you know.
And good mental health, sorry, I just was thinking to myself before, is very pliable, it's flexible, it's, as Bruce Lee would probably say, it's like water. I think that's the key consideration, at least with good mental health, that it's not this set thing. It doesn't look like this. It's not this picture perfect image that you've got to try and aspire or attain.
No. Well, is that how it is for you, James? Is that what you mean? Is that how good mental health means to you?
For me, good mental health is flowing. Yes, it ebbs and flows, and I think that it's unique to everyone in a sense. Yes, there are some characteristics and things that we can learn from each other, but ultimately it is finding a flow, and it changes. It's constantly changing. So I just think that's a really important point, that again, it's not a set rigid approach or structured thing.
Again, you've just stepped in something really helpful that sits in really well with currently where mindfulness teaching is at. Because the trouble is when we are distressed and you want to find the thing that's going to help your mental health, say, and people come to mindfulness and you kind of want somebody to tell you, this is what you haven't been doing and this is the way to do it. You know, I am Steve, you're the teacher. Tell me.
Yeah, what are the answers?
But the truth is, the flow is so important. Actually, what we don't realize when people walk through the door, and I've said this before, it's like, oh, actually, what they don't realize, I'm giving them a surfboard. You know, they're going to learn to surf their own waves. I struggle with the word teacher, and I don't like using the word teacher, coach, facilitator. The way that I teach mindfulness or just teach is to help people tap into their own wisdom, actually. It's there. But what we're doing in terms of what I've said, it's just to start to, you use the word awareness, just to shine a light on our patterns, whichever way works. And actually, it's not, you use the word rigid. Mindfulness world now is moving away from, okay, what works for one person may not work for others. And that includes the sort of practices, the ways, the techniques, much more what works for you. And that goes for what does good mental health for me may be very different to you, James.
Exactly.
You know, and actually that's the thing. And when I get so frustrated, and I know you do, James, if someone purports to have the answer or says, just follow X, Y, and Z, and you will be Y, whatever, Z or A or whatever it is, whatever the equation is, you want to make up, I would run a mile.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If we came on now and we started with, all right, what's good mental health, Steve? Okay, what do? You go walking, I go running, you eat this food. I mean, it might be seductive to hear because you just think, well, yeah, okay, I'll do that and there you go, I'm sorted. But like we're talking about now, that's not the reality of it. That's never the reality of it. And actually, I don't listen to a lot of other podcasts or stuff really in general, but sometimes every now and then I might hear someone talking about mental health, and I don't think that's spoken about enough, how it's unique to you. You know, the same with your physical health, you have to find your flow. And of course you can take inspiration and you can learn, you can be educated, you can practice, but ultimately it's still this sort of flowing and changeable thing that really
your flow,
your own flow,
your exactly own your flow. Flow. And that is so important. Sorry, I should interrupt, because no. I think it's just really important to say that, James. And there's absolutely nothing wrong. And you say you'll take things from different people that resonate, but you're ultimately finding your way. That is the thing. You're finding what is your way. And you've just said empowering, great word. And it's so liberating when you realize ultimately what you're seeking for, and you keep, we're in a world, it's all about striving to do what someone else is telling you. But ultimately, the moment you realize it may not be easy and you don't know how you, I mean, I had that experience myself when I, you know, ultimately I had some kind of crisis, but it's just in the end, you realize I don't need to keep looking out. So it's actually here, but I need some help in terms of being able to tap into that. Now, that in itself, that is probably, well, how do I get into that? How do I start to learn? And there's different ways. And, you know, I mean, obviously mindfulness has been something that's helped me. Talking to a friend. We ought to just talk maybe a little bit about, I was thinking about this during the week as well. You know, we're talking about getting men to talk more. I think we need to be really clear. Oh, look, that could take all different forms. And also, this is going to sound maybe odd, I think we also need something to be we need, depending on what we're going to say, be discerning about who we're going to speak to.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we did touch on it really briefly, just an element of listening about talking to someone else, and are they present? Are they listening? Because when we have a conversation with someone else, it's very easy for the conversation to flow in a direction that is governed by how they're feeling or what's going on for them as well. So as you just said there, it's really important to pick and choose carefully. And that doesn't mean that, you know, and I said this in the last episode actually, that it's not always about receiving something back. So sometimes it's just getting something off your chest or without a great expectation. But equally at the same time, you can have a really different experience talking to this person versus that person. And that can have a huge impact on how things play out from there as well for you and how you're feeling.
Completely. And I think it's difficult because you're not going to say something first. Are you really going to listen to me?
Yeah. You're not going to say, so what's going on? Are you sure you're in the right state? You know, you're not going to have this conversation.
But,
are you in the right
state? But you kind of know. And then what happens is, you usually shut down. What happens is, so often in conversations, and we're all guilty of this, I think more than talking, I think, can we be better listeners? You know, because actually most of the problem when people have mental health, all they really have mental health difficulties, actually they don't want advice. We don't want advice. We just want to know that we're being heard. And I read a really interesting article, I can't remember who I was, it was in The Guardian the other day, about the art of listening. And it was so helpful. It was so spot on. You know, it was like, yeah, we all could just do a little bit better. So I think as well as being getting men to talk, it's also can we be willing to listen? Because so easy that conversations get hijacked. You want to tell somebody something, then immediately it becomes about them and you don't feel listened to at all. So, you know, it's kind of multifaceted. And I think just bearing in mind, yes, we want to talk more, but also can we just listen? Someone comes to you, don't have to think, oh, am I doing the right thing? Maybe just don't say anything. Just let them speak and just see if you could just sit there, let them speak. And when you think they've finished, then you may sort of want to share. But I can't tell you how important, and you said it earlier today, you said it in the last, how we all need to and want to be listened to. And that can really help our mental health when we're struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all those points. And I think, again, we touched on it before, but I think it's another important point to emphasize is that it doesn't have to be this huge conversation. Again, you don't have to put everything on the table. It can just be that, you know, by you learning to express yourself a little bit and just asking someone how they are or them asking you and just having a little bit of conversation around it, that's a great starting point. So I think it's so important to keep that in mind. All the stuff we're talking about from our own experience generally stems from this sort of thing, where we're not, you know, it's a bit like me trying to talk about my physical health. If I talk about my physical health now, it's very different to how it looked 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And it's easy to look at me in this situation, I'm talking about physical health for a second because it's a parallel, and think, oh, that's just how you started. That's just how it was. But it's not how you start. It's, you start with small steps, and all of the things we're talking about, and we talk about from our experiences, are about small steps, things we've done. And that's really important. It's, you know, it's the stuff you don't see.
Yeah, and I think small steps are so important. Just two things that we went through on Monday as you were speaking then. One is, when someone is wanting to share something with you, again, just two pieces of my own experience and things that I found helpful when somebody wants to share something with me, I've learned. Because it's easy, because you do want to, if someone's struggling or suffering, you almost do want to not fix them, but soothe them. And that, there is a place for that, of course, you know, but that's why they're sharing. Number one is just being able to just remember, let the person speak. And so then you know that they heard and you're not judging. And secondly, if you are going to be curious about what they're saying, and a great follow-up question, and I have to say this works absolute treat, and I love it when someone asks me this. It's like, well, what do you need? And actually, in that moment, because people, if you're being really mean to yourself and you're really struggling, if you said, what do you need right now, without any kind of conditionality, that is a lovely thing to offer somebody. Okay, you know, because you obviously know that they're struggling, you say, what do you need?
And yeah, it may, I like just that.
You know, what do you need? And I just want to share one other thing, as just very quickly, sorry, because as you said, James, small steps, and it can feel overwhelming when we have this. I don't even know where to start. I just want to share something that happened to me in the last few days. I was with a client, a young man, who works for himself and literally was just working 6 days a week, both in his day job and also doing some work at home. He's got a young family. It's a classic, so it's a really good one. And first of all, I congratulate him for actually making the time to come and see me for some body work, because he could easily have blown that off too. So I said, you know, because he was really giving himself a hard time because he wasn't getting to the gym and he wasn't eating well and all these sorts of things. And we were chatting and he said, oh, Steve, but once I get through X, Y, and Z, it will be fine. And I said, I hear what you're saying, but what about right now?
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Once I get to that point.
Right. So
once Monday comes.
So I kind of thought, yeah. And I just thought, right, okay. He mentioned briefly he grabs a sandwich at lunch. So I just said to him, okay, so when you eat your sandwich, do you have your phone nearby? Oh, I'm always on my phone. I said, right. So listen, just a small thing maybe you could do is make that your thing, even for 5 minutes, just while you're eating your sandwich. You're still, your head's going to be buzzing, but just put the phone down consciously, or turn it off, put it on pause, put it away from you, and just focus on eating your sandwich for 5 minutes. And just see how, when you go back to yourself, I mean, not to say it's not going to stop anything, your thoughts, but you're not feeding them. You're not feeding the distractions and the stress by just keep taking, and you talk about this all the time, James, about the noise. Just cut the noise in whichever way you can, even for 5 minutes, and then that's a start.
I think that's such an important point. It's a circuit breaker, and it really does work, or certainly those circuit breakers that I try and implement, I find work for me. Because what you were just talking about there is so common. I hear it so many times, and it relates directly back to mental health. You know, once I get to this point, I will do this, or yeah, once I finally move, I'm going for a move, but in a few months, I'll then settle. There's always a future date that just is quite elusive, and it always keeps moving. And actually, by what you're saying there about coming back to the moment and just using these little small steps as a bit of a circuit breaker and a bit of space, is what you're talking about, creating a little bit of space, essentially, can make all the difference. It allows you just to come back to the present moment, tune in, and create a little bit of space that's much needed. And I think that's something we can all do right now. And that, for me, is more valuable than, again, reeling off loads of a list of things that you could potentially do for mental health in terms of, you know, yeah, exercise and go running, eat this, eat that. Like we said earlier, it's so easy to just list those, but actually that's practical and anyone can do that in any form. Again, finding what works for you, it might be slightly different, but it does feel doable.
What you're doing this minute, right now, that you can just create that bit of mental space, literally by just putting the phone to one side, turning the TV off, and just focus on what you're doing then. Have a cup of tea and just focus on the tea for 5 minutes. Have a piece of chocolate and just focus on the chocolate for, you know, for whatever it is. Just a way of, as you said, James, just creating a little bit of headspace, and then see how you feel when you then go back and pick up them. You may find, I don't want to pick up the phone so often. I might want to.
Exactly. So, yeah.
But there's some different choices.
And I don't know about you, but certainly I've had experiences where I've tried to do those things and, you know, it might just be that it's a bit broken up. Taking a bit of time to sit for a few minutes or sit and enjoy a piece of chocolate and be present. By all means, you know, if you can create that space for that short window of time, that's great. But the chances are things are going to be rattling around in your head and it's not going to be plain sailing. So, and again, I'm just talking from experience that, but if you can just allow those things to come up, because you're not trying to get rid of them. I think that's the other thing. We're not trying to get them out of your head completely. You're not going to force anything away. They're still there. They'll still be present, but you're just creating some awareness around what's going on for you in that moment.
That's it in a nutshell.
Well, the question that we started with was, what does good mental health mean? And I do feel like we've addressed it, but in a slightly different way. As I say, our approach is slightly different with this. We could have gone another route, but I feel
like... Well, there's other podcasts, James.
There is other podcasts, and I feel we will return
of our own,
to
I mean,
it.
Don't go looking for anything else.
Oh, well, there are as well, but yeah, stick to mindful mental.
Well, it's a way of opening the topic, and I just, maybe I hijacked. I hope I didn't hijack too much,
no,
but
not
I just
at
want
all.
To bring it into a different angle, because I think there's so many ways. We can't say it enough, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, and I think it's great also to hear maybe a few things now we could just talk about towards the end that perhaps you find helpful for your mental health, and I find, just because I think people sometimes do find it inspiring. I don't think it would be useful to have a whole podcast on what we're doing, because I don't think that's as relevant, but I do think I quite like to hear sometimes what people are doing. So what are there a couple of things that you forget? You know, this isn't you telling people to do this. This is what you find useful for your mental health, Steve.
Oh, exactly what I've just talked about, which is turning things off, stepping away. Actually, when I find myself almost compulsively interrupting that, actually doing, obviously, mindfulness practices, you know, and when, you know, and all the things that, you know, it's not just about going out for a walk, but, you know, when I take the dogs out for a walk, being with the dogs.
So yeah.
Not having a phone with me and, you know, noticing what's around me, all these little things, but it's about presence that you talked about, James, being present, being aware, and stepping away from the noise, but as much as I can, breaking the circuits with all the little kind of little tricks that I was just talking about that I shared with my client.
And I know you've spoken actually before. I remember you've told me about watching TV mindfully. It might sound funny to some, but actually you enjoy watching programs on TV, but being present and not having your phone in front of you or your iPad and then another screen, and you actually enjoy watching certain shows, and that can also be something that actually is quite helpful for your mental health in some ways, because you're present in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like anything, you know, if you go to the theatre, as you know I love to do, or anything you do, are you actually there or are you actually not really there? And I mean, people say, oh yeah, it'd be great when I go on holiday, but they're not on holiday when they go on holiday at all, because they're not. that's what I was trying to say to my client the other day. It's like, when it's all over, no, but what about, what qualities can you bring now? It's about being present. And when you're not, and actually I think you said something really important, which is we're interrupting these patterns. These patterns are always going to be there. There's so much to do in life. There's so many pressures, but this is why these things are needed more than you can hear the passion
he's
in my
getting,
voice now.
He's getting
because
pumped.
I get so angry where people deride, particularly men, trying to take care of their mental health as being some kind of, oh, well, you know, it's a tough world. We've got to toughen up. We've got to man up, not go down. It's like, no, you're missing the point, and I wonder what your story is, but you are missing the point that we need these skills in order to be able to be as healthy as we can in this crazy world, because we're not going to stop the craziness, but how we are in the craziness, we can affect and change.
And while we're on one, actually, I'm getting pumped up now. Now, I'm thinking about these misconceptions as well that annoy me about, oh, yeah, it's all sort of this hoo-ha stuff, like you have to sit in a room on your own and meditate for hours. It's not about that. And that's why I think it's important that stuff we're talking about. You can mindfully watch TV. You can be present in day-to-day activities. These things are good for mental health as well. It's not, you don't have to do some, you know, it, and I am an advocate of meditation because I find it useful and I have done, and I don't always do it, but when I do, I find it helpful. So yes, I think it's great. But by the way, sometimes I just might just have 5 minutes in the morning to meditate. I don't sit there for hours by any stretch. So, but the point I was making was, it's not about that. And I just get bored of it. I think that it's just put in a box again. And I don't know who comes up with this rubbish, but hopefully the stuff we're talking about will not just shine a light on it, but it will make it a bit more relatable and hopefully help people realize that there's a lot of stuff you can do for your mental health that is good on a daily basis. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Small steps, the stuff we talk about.
Well, I know we're going to finish soon, but I just wanted to say, because one of the things you say very much about physical health, James, and it's a great one, and I just want to share it because you always just say, get moving or keep moving. You know,
let's not put one foot in front of the other.
Put one foot, brilliant. And it's the same for the mental health. It, even, you know, you struggle, you might not be able to go out for a run today, or so you're taking the dog for a walk. So, and half the time is how we bring ourselves, we give ourselves a hard time. Yeah, we don't want to over... Yeah, it's great if we can go for a run and all that, but we don't always have time. But there's something we can do, and it's the same for our mental health. And I think that's a good way to...
Definitely. And just on that quickly, I can relate to that because of running. You know, I do enjoy running, but sometimes it can get to a point, and you made this analogy, or not quite an analogy, but you brought this to my attention earlier when you were talking about how too much of something can be detrimental, you know, meditating all the time, but that can be an addiction. Well, running can be the same. And I've found that when there's times where I don't feel great, or I feel these emotions come up, sadness, anger, whatever, and I feel stressed, and I put pressure on myself to go for a run in a certain time or do something like that, that's actually when I feel worse. So it's a prime example of what you're saying. Whereas when I take the mindset and approach of just go out, don't worry about what the Garmin says, just put one foot in front of the other and get moving, nine times out of 10, or actually I'd pretty much say every single time, I feel better for doing something. I feel better for getting out. And it's not about the times or the pressure to do a certain run or to tick a certain box. Actually, it's just about getting out, getting moving, and creating space for my mental health.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to wrap up today's episode. Anything you want to add, Steve?
I think I've said more than enough today. I'm just going to have a moment of contemplation.
You go and sit in the corner and I'll wrap this up. Okay, well, that was episode 2. Thank you for listening, and we will be back for episode 3. But in the meantime, if you want to check us out on social media, of course you can do. We're on Facebook, where you can find us at Mindful Mentor. Our website, mindfulmentor.com. The links will be in the notes of this episode, by the way. And also, we're on Instagram. I told you, Steve, we are. It's not a joke. I mean it. We're on Instagram. I have to remember our handle because it's slightly different. So if you want to find us on Instagram, it is mindfulmen_talk. Mindfulmen_talk. We'll put up some pictures and some stories of the recordings and bits and pieces that we want to share on there too. And of course, you can leave us a review, and you can share our podcast by simply sending the link or the app or our website to someone you know who hopefully might benefit from hearing us talk. That is today's episode. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.